Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You know what? Can we just for tonight pretend like we're one of those couples that can consume a meal in blissfully dysfunctional silence?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 2, Failing Down. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Oh, hi.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to early Season 4. Before we get into this episode, a little update about what's going on in the Patreon. Again with this episode 244. Can you believe it? That drops Friday, June 20th. Let's watch Denise Dowse, Gregory Itzen, and David Newsome. Yes, they were all in Starburst properties. In The Mentalist. It's a season one episode. That's season one, episode 4, Ladies in Red. You can find it on Hulu. It will be in our show notes. This and every other of the gazillion, it seems like, episodes for Again with This that we've done are available at againwiththispodcast.com/club if you join us at any level. And we hope you do. We have a really good time.
So true. Let's get into this episode first with the caveat that everyone be aware I am sick. That's why my voice sounds like this. I'm sorry. I know it's not pleasant. It's not pleasant for me either, but we're going to get through it. Let's start with our B plot. He may be a sophomore, but Henry's still a freshman at heart. We open the storyline with Jack calling Jen out for spending the day compulsively checking and rechecking her email. And after she half-assedly denies it, she admits that based on his online silence, she thinks that Henry is seeing someone else. Jack assures her when she frets about it that he's sure she is a very generous cyber sex partner, oh boy. But then The good old you've got mail notification sounds on Jack's email and his face falls. Jen asks who wrote and he shuts the computer and doesn't say, And then we're with Andy and Jack as she exposits what was in the shocking email. Henry wants to take a break with Jen and being a child told Jack instead of Jen herself, clip 2.
After all that, after doggedly pursuing her for an entire school year, after scores of grand romantic gestures, after behavior that clearly licensed professionals would call stalking, he wants to take a break?
Yeah, well, look, he's at a new school. Girls are flirting with him. And he's confused. Henry's a great guy, but he's 16.
Guys are maddening creatures.
Tell me about it.
So what'd you tell him?
I said I'd talk to her.
No, Jack, I don't think that's a good idea. In fact, it borders on the terrible.
Why?
Because whatever is between Jen and Henry is firmly and clearly between Jen and Henry. And besides, if a guy was going to break up with me, God, I would hope that he would be big enough to do it on his own instead of sending an intermediary in.
Do you not know you're on a television program, young lady? That said, thank you for using the word stalking. That whole, like, why did we sit through all of that if it was just going to end like this? Mm-hmm. Not that I'm complaining that it's ending by any means. It's just taking its usual sweet time about doing it. But I do appreciate that the writers were like, yeah, Henry, fuck what's up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Agree.
Yeah, seriously. Jack has apparently decided not to take Andy's advice and has called Jen to meet him on a dock somewhere. She jokes about him wanting a crossover episode now that she's taken. Har har. Jack asks if she's heard from Henry, and she admits she hasn't, but thought Jack was right the other day when he suggested that she give Henry time to settle in. After that, they'll talk and things will be fine. What if things go the other way? Jack wonders. Jen is somehow completely oblivious and makes Jack spell out the question of what she might do if things don't work out with Henry. He changes the subject to dinner, but Jen asks straight out if he has talked to Henry, and Jack admits he has. But when she asks if Henry asked Jack to talk to her, he denies it. It doesn't work, and her next question is whether Henry is breaking up with her. Jack stammers another denial, and she stalks off. And the number of times you have to say, she asks if he said, and he said, it's just so convoluted. I know they have to get here somewhere, but like, just have him email her a Dear John letter or a Dear Jen letter, and let's move on.
Yeah, really.
But when we see her next, Jen is on the dock, a different dock with Dawson. I don't know what the episode's director, whose name is Sandy Smolin, thought he was doing, but shooting them from like the other side of the island in this scene is a strange choice, and it's not the only time it happens either.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jen is pouting that the only boyfriend she ever had made her best friend dump her, so she's angry. Dawson manages not to say he thought he was her first real boyfriend, but still has to make this about himself and his heartbreak, which there's plenty more of in the A-plot. Sorry. As he advises Jen that her anger is just a distraction. If you do it right, loving someone is going to hurt, and the sooner Jen lets herself feel that, the sooner she'll be able to love again. Jen laughs that she doesn't need one of Dawson's self-help seminars, but he's just trying to repay the favor by being there for her like she has been countless times for him. She has taught him that love can suck, but that through it all, friendship remains sacred. Clip 3.
God, without you guys, this summer just would have been a huge black hole of depression for me.
You have to be so damn earnest. It's disgusting, really. I mean, it makes me want to drown you in the creek.
It's part of my charm. The funny thing about friends, sometimes they bring you the worst of news, but it's always with the best of intentions. Jack.
Hey.
Thank God. Take her off my hands for a little while?
Sure.
Jeez.
Jesus. Also, what's with the Billy erasure? Didn't we have to sit through like two whole episodes of him?
Oh yeah, Billy. That guy.
Shout out to Dawson for wearing a shirt that kind of fits in that scene, though.
Mm-hmm. So, when Dawson has moved on, Jen tells Jack she owes him an apology. That was going to be his line, he says. Jen just didn't need Jack to be the one to give her the bad news. She wanted him to be her shoulder. So he gives it to her, and it's sweet, although Kerr Smith doesn't seem to remember until they're halfway through that he's supposed to be gay and not currently turned on, because he, you know, just looks like he likes it a little too much. That's all.
Yeah, agree.
On to the A-plot. Between her boyfriend's academic issues and her new job at the yacht club, Joey is stressed. School's back on. Pacey is pessimistic about being called to the guidance office. He is in jorts, by the way, so maybe that's part of it. He's embarrassed to be seen in them. Joey makes a joke about them just wanting to help Pacey achieve his goal of being the world's greatest gas station attendant, which, as he observes, is rude, but sets us up for this. Clip 4.
What, suddenly Teezu's out of the question?
Oh, no, tease away, you little hussy. But you do raise an interesting point. I think we should talk about it now that we're back to school.
Talk about what exactly?
Well, our mutual wants and needs.
Did you actually just say that out loud?
Well, like you said, we're a couple now, Potter. And as a couple, I think there's a couple things we need to discuss.
Such as?
Kissing in public.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Well, if it's of a spontaneous variety.
Decreeing that they can only plan to kiss in public if it's spontaneous is very her.
Yeah, not how that works. And also, don't kiss in public. Nobody likes that. Nobody enjoys having to squeeze past you. I actually kind of felt a little sorry for Dawson. He's just trying to go to class. Yeah, don't put me in that position, please.
We'll get there. Yeah, they go on. Clip 5.
Good Lord, woman. You really are a fickle mistress. You know that? I mean, without kissing, what do we really have left?
Precious little. Hmm. We should probably break up.
Yeah, well, we had a good run, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's when they smile at each other and, of course, start furiously making out. There's an extra who comes up on the right side of the screen as they're going at it and shakes his head like, oh, fuck. And then, as Sarah said, Dawson comes up the other side and then quietly has to ask them more than once to get out of the way. And they are embarrassed. And they kind of should be. It's not the greatest.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sometime later, Joey and Andy are walking by the water, making small talk about their senior year and Joey's need to get a job so she's not stuck at Capeside Community College. Andy tells her that the Capeside Yacht Club is looking for a server. It's just the ice house with cute rich boys and bigger tips. It's the off season, but sure. Mm-hmm. Joey thinks that her connection to her father's scandal probably rules her out for a job there. So Andy tells her to act like she's one of them. Clip six.
If you think the interview is starting to go south, you drop a name. Who's? Well, I would say you could use mine, but these days McPhee is synonymous with gay, crazy, and dysfunctional. Hey, how about the Rosses? They're on the board. Charles, Kate, and son Owen. Oh my God, he is so gorgeous. So our age, and so eligible. Oh, and so perfect for me if I actually cared about those things.
But you digress.
Okay, so anyway, Joey, where else are you going to make that kind of money?
Well, you know, there is always that strip club on the edge of town.
If that's your backup plan, you're going to need to work on your posture. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Also, how small is this town that Joey has to be told which Richies are going to be basically discriminating against her based on her father's law enforcement contact, which, like, all of this just reads very 50s, like Peyton Place kind of approach to small town life, or, you know, soapy, which I guess it is, but I don't know. Like, have they all known each other since they were babies and lived in the town their whole lives or not? She would know who Owen Ross is. Anyway.
Yep. In town, Dawson and his fistful of CDs run into Gretchen. Apparently, Doug's sexuality is a joke the whole Witter family enjoys, as she says she needs a new apartment because Doug isn't going to be a fit roommate until he finds an air quotes partner. Thus, she's going to be living with her equally irritating but less anal brother. And at the mention of Pacey, Dawson clenches up, wishes her luck, and tries to peel off, but she follows him into the record store, telling him how sad it makes her that the formerly inseparable friends have fallen out. Is there anything she can do? He loudly huffs and she drops it, instead flipping through the offensive stack of CDs he's there to trade in, and it turns into a truly loathsome cred fight. Clip 7.
Mm-hmm.
Vanilla Ice? What were you thinking?
I don't know. I was 10. Who's got good taste in music when they're 10?
By the time I was 10, I could rattle off the name of every band on the Sub Pop label, and I was telling anybody who would listen that a guy named Kurt Cobain was about to change the face of music as we knew it.
I remember the time I was 10, I could rattle off the name of every cinematographer Steven Spielberg had ever worked with. Which somehow isn't that impressive, is it?
Neither of you is impressive.
Yeah. I could not stand her because of this, because of that Sub Pop line. When I was recapping the show, I was just like, oh my God, hipper than thou, fuck off.
Yeah.
But they're both bad.
They are, but they also said in the previous episode that she would keep the house up with her loud soul music. So, like, what is her actual deal? Not that you can't like more than one kind of music, but that doesn't really track, in my opinion.
No. Same.
Gretchen doesn't know why Dawson is trading in the Grateful Dead. See, that doesn't track either. And instead of saying true fans only like bootlegs, to be clear, I'm not one of them, but every one of my high school friends was. Dawson says his parents got it for him and he never really liked it. Gretchen roasts him for being a teen whose parents have better taste than he does. And then we're at the yacht club where the very brisk Mrs. Valentine, played by soap star Carolyn Hennessy, later of Cougar Town, is snottily asking Joey what an ice house is. Joey tells her what it was before it burned down. And when Mrs. Valentine continues being bitchy about it, Joey claims that Daddy thought it would be a good idea for Joey to mingle with the little people. When Mrs. Valentine asks, Joey says Daddy is in pharmaceuticals. Not bad.
Good line. Yeah.
If Daddy made so much money in the field, why aren't the Potters members of the club? Mrs. Valentine wonders. Mirroring Mrs. Valentine's body language, Joey says they're not really joiners. And to her next question, Joey says she spent her summer sailing. Mrs. Valentine asks if Joey was a deckhand or a stowaway, and Joey gets down to it. Clip 8.
Excuse me, but before I submit to another second of your thinly veiled bitchery, do you need a waitress or not? Yes, now that I recall, that position's already been filled. Terrific. Oh, by the way, I'll be sure to tell the Rosses that you said hello.
Excuse me. You know the Rosses?
Charlie, Kate, and Owen? Oh, from way back. How do you think I heard about this position? Well, they're on the board here, aren't they?
Miss Potter, I think, perhaps, you and I got off on the wrong foot.
Okay. This is the only way Joey could get a wrong foot in the door here, probably. This lady's new in town and does not know who she is.
Yeah.
And then we're at school, where Pacey comes in for his guidance appointment. We all learn at the same time that Mitch is filling the role temporarily. I'm not sure I would take guidance from someone who just got his first job as an adult last year, but sure. Also, good luck to Gail, now down a general manager at the restaurant. Mitch exposits about the guy Pacey sent into early retirement, and I really hope he means Mr. Milo, because Mr. Kapanos was like 33, but anyway. Mitch explains that when Pacey was sailing to Florida and back with Joey, he was actually supposed to have been in summer school because he failed science, history, and English, all kind of big ones. Pacey is in big trouble and has to take those classes over after school, and no, that means he can't get a job because he's going to need to focus. Pacey finally asks what happens if he can't, and instead of saying, we should have you tested for a learning disability, Mitch says Pacey will be watching his friends graduate next May without him. After the commercial, Gretchen is leading Pacey by the hand to a rental house he assumes from the outside is rat-infested. And I implore you, if you're not watching along, to go to the visual aids and look at this place, because it has a wraparound porch that we can see. I think it might be too much house for two pre-adults, if anything.
Yeah. Also, wasn't it Tamara's house? I'm almost sure it was.
Hers was it was just a cottage, like a bungalow. This had two stories.
Oh, okay. But I seem to remember the Porsche. All right.
I think it's probably in that neighborhood, though.
Yeah, has to be.
It's dingy inside, but it's so big, and Gretchen says it's in their budget. She finally notices that Pacey's in a worse mood than usual, and he tells her he just found out he's not exactly a senior. Gretchen briskly tells him he'll just do everything Mitch told him to. It's not that big a deal. She asks what Joey thinks, and when she realizes he hasn't told her yet, asks why. Well, because this just happened and it's 2000, so he couldn't text her. But what he actually says is that Joey is smart and Pacey's an idiot, trying not to make her any more aware of that than she already is. Gretchen says Pacey isn't an idiot. She's pretty sure Joey's not with him because of his GPA. Any reassurance Gretchen possibly could offer will sound better coming from Joey, though. So Gretchen thinks he has to tell her. And I guess the yacht club needed help more desperately than Mrs. Valentine was letting on, because the very next scene, after seeing Pacey still in his first day of school outfit at the rental house, is Joey on shift.
Mega day, hero of song and story.
Right. And this shift that she's on is also going to be over by dinner time. So, like, I don't know why they even bothered putting her in a uniform for like 3 hours, but
I know.
Sure. So dumb. A kid in a salmon button-down flags Joey down to remind her that he ordered an iced tea and a club sandwich half an hour ago, and she gasps an apology he nicely accepts, saying he know how that is. And instead of saying something appropriate like, thank you for being understanding, Joey says she doubts that, which kicks us into this. Clip 9.
Let me guess. The boyfriend bailed when the stick turned blue, leaving his rusted out Camaro up on blocks on your lawn, forcing you to drop out of school and rely on your not-so-reliable alky mom to watch the little carpet monkey while you wait tables on your high horse. None of which is my problem, hon. This is seriously going to cut into your gratuity. Oh, come on. Where's your sense of humor? I was kidding. Well, not kidding, actually. More like conducting an experiment. My father, who is a world-class cretin, says stuff like that to the help all the time, and I always think, what an idiot. You know? I mean, they're just going to go back in the kitchen and spit in his food. Or worse, even.
Fancy that? Mm-hmm. Will you excuse me while I go check on your order?
You would, wouldn't you?
What?
Spit in my food.
Or worse, even.
You don't give this rich asshole, whose provenance you do not know, any leverage over you. What are you, stupid? Like, what the fuck?
No. That's what going through the swinging doors, bitching about it to the rest of the staff, and then hawking one up is for.
Yes. If you wanted to convince him that you're really on top of getting his order after all this time, go to the kitchen and check on it, or put in the order, which you probably obviously didn't do. But she doesn't, which permits him to follow her to the side of the dining room for this clip 10.
I knew it. You strike me as very much in touch with your dark side. Thank you for your candor.
Oh, my pleasure.
First day on the job, huh?
Yes.
And how much do you hate them already?
Who?
The superficial snobs, laying down huge sums for the privilege of frolicking in the presence of other members of their tribe. Creeps.
Wow. Cue the violins. You know, nothing tugs the heartstrings like the anguished cry of a poor little rich boy. Can you sign, please?
Sure.
First day on Earth? This is not how it works. Call the strip club, see if they're hiring.
So she gives him the check and freezes when she sees that he has signed Owen Ross, as in the name that she dropped to get this job. But she recovers and says his order will be right up. And maybe when she goes to get it, they'll explain the guest signs for the meal at the end. Over to the Leary house, where Mitch finds Dawson listening to the Grateful Dead album Gretchen tried to peer pressure him into liking, unsuccessfully, as he tells Mitch, without mentioning Gretchen. And after some blah about the best way to experience the dead, in my opinion, not to.
Yes.
Mitch makes his first big error as a guidance counselor by totally breaking confidentiality to tell Dawson about Pacey. Dawson is, unsurprisingly, a bitch about it. Clip 11.
And that concerns me how?
Well, look, I know that Pacey isn't your favorite person right now, but trust me, you're not always going to feel like that.
I don't know that. I could maybe see this one standing the test of time.
Hear me out. Pacey has gotten himself into some real academic trouble. Without the support of his friends, he might not graduate high school.
Well, what do you expect me to do about it?
I don't know. But I've always taken pride in the fact that my son is someone his friends can turn to when they need him.
Oh, do you have another son? Hope we get to meet him sometime, because this one sucks ass and is a terrible friend.
I mean, he is reliable in his way. Not what Mitch meant, but seriously, like, have you met your child? Because no.
Dawson sighs before recapping what happened with Pacey and Joey and how badly it hurt Dawson. Clip 12.
Now, I think I've done a pretty good job of trying to move forward, but that doesn't mean that Pacey gets to go on reaping the benefits of my friendship.
I mean, look, I don't disagree with Dawson. Mitch is being completely unprofessional. And also, like, I know he sucks, but he is your son. Be on his side with this. But, like, reaping the benefits of your friendship, like, I don't think anyone has ever been less sad about, quote, losing those, quote, benefits than Pacey. My God. Unless it's Joey, LOL.
Seriously. Yeah, I want to see that benefits package, please. Let's give me the whole folder. I want to go through it in detail. With finality, Dawson says he can't help Pacey, and Mitch sighs that maybe Dawson knows someone who can. And first of all, let me repeat, Mitch should not have told anyone about this other than Pacey's parents, which he has, by the way. But having resolved to maybe go to Joey in the first place and spared us all of this, particularly since Joey and Dawson are barely talking either. Anyway, then we're with Joey and Pacey eating pizza on the deck of his boat. She asks about his day and he mumbles that it was just swell. Joey thinks he's just grumpy because they're not in the Atlantic anymore. And he says he could pack it up and get them back out there in about 15 minutes. All this school stuff will still be here when they get back. But Joey isn't about to abandon their senior year. There's only one more year to endure before no more classes, no more books, and no more Dawson's dirty looks, Pacey adds. Joey gives up and changes the subject slightly to his guidance appointment, but Pacey would rather eat in blissfully dysfunctional silence. So she tries to tell him about her new job. He's muted in his congratulations, saying he didn't know she was so fixated on getting a job. She says he, of all people, should know how badly she needs to make the extra money. Which, not so badly, she didn't blow off 2+ prime money-making months on a boat, not even having sex. But anyway, clip 13.
Yeah.
I mean, without it, I'm doomed to roam the streets of Capeside for eternity, which is unacceptable. You know, I'm not ending up some townie.
When did you become a snob, Miss Potter?
What are you talking about?
Well, what's wrong with being a townie?
Well, nothing.
No, honestly, if someone lives in the same place their whole life, that somehow makes them a bad person?
No, of course not.
But if I was to become a townie?
But you're not that kind of a person.
Oh, I didn't ask what type of person I was. I said, what if I became a townie? Well, would that somehow make me less desirable to you? Guess that's my answer.
What's going on with you?
Nothing.
So why are you trying to pick a fight with me all of a sudden?
I'm not trying to pick a fight
with you. Yes, you are. I mean, something is going on with you, and you obviously don't want to talk about it, which is fine, okay? I understand that, but, I mean, please don't sit here and try to pick some random fight with me just to make yourself feel better.
I mean, not that that's a bad point on her part, but all of this is just, and we really have to come up with some shorter way to say this. I don't know if TVTropes.com has a term for, like why did they wait for the cameras to show up to have XYZ conversation.
Yeah.
This is a perfect example. Like, they were on a boat all summer. They wouldn't have talked about her job. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have talked about the fact that she needs to basically fundraise / get a scholarship to go to four-year college. They wouldn't have been on the same page about getting out of Capeside when apparently he hates his family of origin, except right. Gretchen.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't they have also learned how to fight when they were crammed into a teeny, like, the true love is not that big.
Right.
Wouldn't you know how to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great point.
It's just exhausting. And this goes on for a while in mm-hmm. the season that it's like, did you guys step on land and then the entire summer was just erased and you had to go back to one?
Yeah.
Anyway, I will workshop a term for we're just not going to have any conversation at all or exchange any information until someone with a steady cam shows up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cute.
No.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
The next day, a teacher is calling the roll and getting no answer for Witter. Dawson glances over at an empty desk and rolls his eyes about having to care about someone else. Then we're at the yacht club where Joey interrupts the kid we know as Owen Ross in his New York Magazine reading. And I looked it up. It's the July 17th, 2000 issue. Fittingly, the cover story is 30 country escapes, the best inns and B&Bs near the city. Don't hear that the Potter B&B is one of them, but, you know, not bad. Owen is suspicious that Joey's been both attentive and friendly to him. She dropped the snappy sarcasm thing she had working for her yesterday, and it's creeping him out. He asks her to sit with him so he can show her something. A couple chatting with a guy in a golf shirt. Joey thinks it looks pretty boring until Owen says that golf shirt and the wife are having an affair, and the husband is fooling around with a busty blonde off to the side. Owen then points to yet another club member as the local plastic surgeon who gave that woman those boobs and is a creep. And then he ends on Mrs. Valentine, saying she's the worst of them all. She used to be married to one of the beautiful people, but her New York City rainmaker husband traded her in for someone younger. She had got used to the money, so she took her kid and got a job that would allow her to be around rich people and be rich by association. No wonder she's such a bitch, says Joey, then asks how he knows all this stuff. Hanging around the club has helped him soak up a lot of useless information, he says. These people have all the money in the world and no class. And Joey gives him a sidelong, look, but has no further questions. And that night, Joey opens the B&B door to Dawson, who is returning some CDs he borrowed from her years ago. He takes a beat before saying he should go, but under the tiniest amount of questioning tells her to talk to Pacey about school because he's on the verge of flunking out. Dawson doesn't know why he should care, but if anyone could help him out, it's Joey. And she flaps that if Pacey were in trouble, she would probably know about it, but Dawson doesn't think so, because when you love someone, you want her to be proud of you, and the thought of disappointing her is crippling. And as Joey gops at this, Dawson shambles off. At least he can say he was the better person this time. This one time.
Yeah, this wasn't a terrible episode for him. Like, there's still sort of like the top stinky notes of seasons 2 and 3, but it does seem like the writers are trying to throttle him back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So Pacey and Gretchen sure got their shit together fast, because the place they were looking at for the first time yesterday is partly furnished as Joey comes to find Pacey. He is all sweet coming toward her, but she shoves him away, and clip 14.
Why weren't you in school today? Why are you suddenly in danger of flunking out? Why do I have to hear about it from Dawson? Why does Dawson know more about your life right now than I do, Pacey?
Well, because apparently Leary Sr. has a very big mouth. And oh, how I bet Junior loved being on the receiving end of that.
Can we just stick to the point, please?
No, honestly, I'm sure he loved hearing that, you know? Now he's salivating. The guy gets to swoop in on his soulmate with a big fat I told you so.
Are you delusional? Dawson has zero to do with this, Pacey.
Yeah, sure.
Do you have any idea how insulting it is to know that I come up last on your list of people to contact in case of an emergency?
Joe, this is not that big a deal, you know? I'm handling it.
And how does cutting school translate into handling it, Pacey? Why does this even surprise me?
What exactly is that supposed to mean?
Exactly what I said. This is how you deal with everything. You run away. You take the easy way out every time.
Well, I guess that's why I'm such a loser.
You know, you're not a loser, Pacey. I didn't spend my summer with a loser. You know, building what I thought was an incredible foundation for a relationship. I thought that we were a great team. It
Turns out I guess I couldn't have been more wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not bad. I think she's making points. She's being clear about what she wants. That's progress.
Yeah. And it's incredibly melodramatic that it's like, this one thing that you failed to tell me says so much about everything in our relationship. That's like, okay, everybody's 17.
Got it. It's true. The next morning, Gretchen orders Pacey to pull himself together and apologize to Joey. Gretchen won't let him sabotage himself because he's scared. Pacey pouts that he had no chance of being confident after growing up with his father and Doug telling him he was a loser all the time. Gretchen agrees that they are jerks, but Pacey should just get over that because Pacey's real problem is his own insecurities over not measuring up to Dawson. Joey picked Pacey, and now Pacey has to deal with it. Well said.
Great line.
At the yacht club, Mrs. Valentine tells Joey she was going over the previous day's receipts and saw that a couple were signed by Owen Ross. Mrs. Valentine thought Joey said she was a good friend of the family. Joey shrugs that she is. In that case, shouldn't Joey know that Owen and the rest of the Rosses are in Paris until the new year? Joey says he was here, she served him, and he was very rude. And then, clip 15.
I'm not sure this is going to work out, Miss Potter.
Actually, Mom, the Ross kid was here.
Drew, honey, I'm right in the middle of something here.
Gotcha, Moms, but maybe you didn't hear what I said. Owen Ross, he was here. I saw him, own two eyes. And I saw Joey here waiting on him, and I think you might want to commend her for the way she handled him, because that guy, he can be real high maintenance.
I don't think we actually needed another Abby Morgan, but I'm glad this one showed up. I always liked Drew Valentine and thought he was this weird, chaotic evil. And I think Tara and I differ on that, but he's also cute. What can I say?
Oh, well, we definitely differ on that.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. He does have kind of a three head. I get it. It's not for everyone.
It's not even that. His part is like not, it's like almost center and almost side, but like neither. He looks like a mean caricature of Benedict Cumberbatch to me.
Yes, he does. More for me.
All for you. Shortly thereafter, Joey finds the supposed Owen hosing off a boat deck and demands to know what that was. He tells her to watch her tone since he just saved her job. When Joey asks directly, he says he is actually Drew Valentine, and Joey's like, Mrs. Valentine, that's your mom, as though him calling her mom one scene ago did not get her there.
Yeah.
She reminds She reminds him of all that horrible stuff he said about Mrs. Valentine, and he replies that it was true. Mrs. Valentine told him about the new girl who was a friend of the Rosses, and he knew as soon as he saw Joey that she had lied her way into the job, which he digs about her, by the way, he says. Joey calls him a freak, but with a smile, so we know she likes him too somehow. And he admits that he's not who he said he was. He's a lot more fun. Goes back to boatening. I don't know what he's doing on the boat. She glares at his back. And if this is supposed to be an obstacle guy for her and Pacey, he should have been cuter. Sorry. That's just my opinion. And apparently just mine, not yours.
Yeah, like that's not necessary for the show to do. And I get it. I don't remember exactly where it goes with him, but maybe obstacle guy-ishness.
Yeah.
The fact is, like, we had a sort of non-agreement in the visual aids about how Joey should be handling this. And it's sort of like, I agree that she should not be charmed by him at all. That was dick behavior. And she should tattle, or I don't even know, like, tell his mother, like, keep him out from underfoot. I'm trying to work. That's annoying. Mm-hmm. Unionize, whatever. But with all of that said, like, she did not handle that well. And I kind of think it's funny when he fucks with main characters, if I recall correctly. So we'll see what happens.
At the marina later, Pacey finds Joey waiting on his boat, barely making eye contact. Pacey says Gretchen told him it's a good idea to discuss your problems with your girlfriend. And Joey says it's nice that someone in the Witter family has some brains. Pacey doesn't know where to start, so he tries this. Clip 16.
You, Josephine Potter, have just wrecked me. In the best possible way, you have absolutely wrecked me. Because, you see, I fell in love with you, knowing that there was never any possibility of being with you. Knowing full well that a sizable chunk of your heart would always be wrapped up in our friend, Dawson. And that much was actually okay with me. Right up until the point that you chose me. Because then you just turned everything on its head. Then I got everything that I wanted, and from that day forward, I've just been a wreck.
Why?
Because now all I can do is just wait for the other shoe to drop. You know, just wait for you to realize what a big mistake you've made. I'll wait for you to realize that I'm just going to be a big disappointment. And just wait for you to realize that... that Dawson is the guy that you want to be with.
Oh, boy. Well, he said it. I mean, that was very brave.
Yeah. Not sure how realistic it is for a sober teenage boy to be this direct, but that's the show we're dealing with, so... Yeah,
it's true. I didn't mind it. This is, by the way, the second scene that's shot from like a football field away, which you can see in the visual.
Okay.
Joey doesn't get what Dawson has to do with Pacey's grades. So Pacey explains that Dawson never would have screwed up like Pacey did, you know, maybe because he has parents who pay attention to him sometimes. Joey agrees, but points out another thing Dawson would never do, inspire Joey to run away with him for the summer. Pacey and Joey shared something Joey will remember for the rest of her life. They're creating their own history Dawson has nothing to do with. But this is where it gets rough. They made their own reality, but it couldn't last forever. Pacey tearfully says he's really scared of flunking out of high school, so he needs Joey's help. And she tells him that's all he needed to say. Whatever it takes, they're going to fix it and everything will be okay because she's not going anywhere without him. And he asks, how come she's so much smarter than he is? She says, she's not that much smarter. He's just emotionally delayed, although she uses a different word, and wow, yes. Did it land with the clunk. I mean...
Oh, wow. That was, like, shocking. And, like, I guess that we weren't quite there.
She's also not using it in the slur sense either, but it's still, like...
Yeah.
It's still rough. Rough on the ear.
Yeah, I thought that we had gotten way past that already by that point, and it was like, oh! Like...
Yeah.
I twitched. Mm-hmm. Not cute.
Pacey grabs Joey's hand to make out some more, and with a little more closing banter, we're out. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. I'm going to say Gretchen, other than the Sub Pop line, she made some points about Dawson's CD collection and about Pacey's relationship. And most importantly, she found them that sick house. So good job.
Yeah, I agree with you. Honorable mention to Jen, who has, I think, finally ridded herself of the plague that is Henry, and her tank top in that first email checking scene.
So cute.
I want it. Mm-hmm, and I very know you cute. Agree with me on that.
Mm-hmm. Least valuable player.
Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch. He broke confidentiality.
Zipper it, mm-hmm. Bitch.
Yeah. But agreeing with that, I'll say honorable mention to Mrs. Valentine, although she's going to be fun for the next few episodes, I think, being from a completely different kind of a show that I like.
Mm-hmm. Next time on Again With This, it's stormy weather, literally and emotionally, when Andy's college interview hits the shoals, Pacey and Jen get trapped at sea, and Dawson and Joey steal a boat from the father-in-law from Fargo. Speaking of things that need stuffing into a wood chipper, early aughts fashion, ladies and gents, you could see that and much more in our visual aids, which we do and have done for every episode of Again With This. Find them, along with the aforementioned every episodes, at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I am mortally embarrassing CD stack Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Actual Benefit of Your Friendship, Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is real high maintenance. Talk to you next time.
Dawson sucks. Cheers.